Krishna prastaya bhutale shrimati bhaktivedanta swami niti namane namaste sarasvati deve gauravani pratarane nirvisesa sanyavadi paskachade shatarane vandeham shri guru shri yuta padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raganatham vitam sam sajivam sadvaitam sadvadutam parijana sahita krishna chaitanya devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Trupascha Kipasanavya Vatapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today is the 27th of January 2023, VIHE, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Text 29 through 35. So I'm sure as many of you have heard, my grandson died yesterday, and I am definitely having a hard time. I will do my very best, and I'm very grateful that I have this opportunity to meditate on the Shastra. I didn't want to inconvenience anybody, you know. I spent about 4 hours prepping for each of these classes, so I figured, you know, pulling in someone else at the last minute would be a difficulty to everybody's schedule. And anyway, I'm going to do the best I can, and I'm going to try to remember what we said yesterday, that if we are conscious of Krishna, we are having fun. Because Krishna is full of fun. And Krishna is full of leelas, and even apparently horrific things are also part of his plan. So, but please excuse me if I'm not quite myself today. So I wanted to first go over our mission accomplished from yesterday. We had the 13 items that Sanat Kumar said we should practice to do bhakti. And everyone's mission was to pick either one of them that they felt that they could give themselves a 4 or 5 on and find some way yesterday to celebrate it, or something that they had a 1 or a 2 on and find some way to improve it. So I'm going to ask you to share that in the chat, please. Thank you, Ajip. Your prayers for him would be appreciated. My husband said he heard Prabhupada say that if you pray for someone who has passed away, your prayers act like character witnesses in a court. Anyway, let's please concentrate. Well, although we have so many things in this world, we do have our wonderful transcendent philosophy. Yes, well, the family is in Seattle. You can send me a message separately after the class. All right, please, let's celebrate our mission accomplished. So let's see, what did I do for my mission accomplished yesterday? So I was talking with my daughter about, because right now I'm reading the Mahabharata, talking to her about Arjuna lamenting for Abhimanyu and Kunti lamenting for Karna, and that was helped to pacify our own grief. So that's my mission accomplished for today. So somebody, mission accomplished. What did you do either to do something well that you're celebrating, or something that you improve that you struggle with? Please put it in the chat. Or you can raise your hand and speak out as you like. Yes, Ajay Prabhu.
You thought it was easy to speak, right? So, my mission was to tolerate duality.
Oh.
And I had phone call with the devotee, needing some help, and went over it, but was some of the argument in the house. So I actually failed, responding to duality situations, but I was at least able to notice what I did wrong.
That is the first step. Congratulations. That is the first step. The first step is always noticing what we're doing wrong. We can't fix anything unless we notice it. Excellent. That's an excellent mission accomplished. Thank you. Shyam Kishore Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Dandavat Pranam. So my mission which I took was about not associating much with materialistic people.
Okay.
And the challenge is because, so I looked at my life like structurally, because I have a structural issue in my life, like apart from, because the kind of work and the profession I do, like I'm in finance, like investment banking, private equity, and it's a profession where you are always like, you know, associating with people who are like, who are always talking about money, because that is the nature of the profession.
Yes.
And the nature of the job. And then I thought that I should make some little step. It will be very tough for me to like, or be able to make a very radical shift, but at least I thought through that I have a choice of choosing those people, like even within my profession, who are less like, you know, only thinking about money, but have like, you know, they have a more holistic view. So at least that would be a good starting point for me to, from an association perspective.
Excellent. Excellent. Mission accomplished. Excellent. Actually, you would also probably like our career Dharma course. I was teaching some of it to our Gurukul high school students yesterday, and when we were talking about the four varnas, which we call the field of ideas, the field of government, the field of resources, and the field of artistry. And in the field of resources, it's the dharma of that field to constantly wanting to be increasing wealth. Of course, it should be pious, honest wealth that's then used for the benefit of society. And there's a class I heard recently where Prabhupada said, you know, people, if they're interested in making more and more money, they can still make more and more money in order to please Krishna. All right, so Dwaita Chandrabhu says...
Thank you, Mataji. In fact, I'm very interested in that course. And what I also want to mention to you, which I think I have sometimes mentioned in the past, that in all my history of taking all the courses, all the classes in ISKCON, your hermeneutics class was... stand out. I've never attended such a great course, and I hope, like, apart from this, at some point you also come up with hermeneutics part 2. Hare Krishna.
Well, right now I'm concentrating on the career dharma course and book, but thank you. Okay, Dwaita Krishnaprabhu said, improving on how I'm putting more attention to chanting Gayatri on very specific times. Excellent. Mission accomplished. And I've been doing this also. The Sastric Advisory Council has written a paper on the Brahma Gayatri, which we can't publish yet. We're waiting for GBC approval to publish it. But in the course of writing this paper with our team of scholars, it's really pushed me to give more attention. All right, from Ekanta, I tried to tolerate a situation which was a bit unpleasant for me and to see bright sides of it. Excellent, mission accomplished. All right, and we have from Ambika, I like my compassion towards other people and other living entities. It is something I really love about Krishna consciousness. Nonviolence is included, of course. I would just like to realize the limit between compassion and sense gratification because it is easily on the other side.
Yeah.
Very good. So that's a good celebration of something you're doing well. Tolerance, I would like to have more, and especially the right type of tolerance, like to let them to use me, but not to abuse me. Very nice. Mission accomplished. Excellent. Okay, Mahalakshmi.
So, yesterday, when I was going after the class, later on I was going to close the greenhouse for Tulasi, and the sun was in the middle of doing that, the sun was coming down and the children were coming up from the path back home, to their homes here. I remember how Krishna and Balarama with their friends and calves, they come back home, and just by that time when the sun is setting, so I took advantage of that moment to remember the pastime. And in the morning when I awoke also, I was remembering how the Lord also, well, he doesn't want to awake. It seems that he doesn't, also sometimes I don't want to awake, but how the parrots call him and how their gobi friends try to encourage them to get up and go back home. So I remember that also, that I hear the pastimes on of the Astakaliya Lila, so I am trying to do that because it is very helpful.
Very nice, very nice. Mission accomplished. All right, so let's hear from others, please. Some people we haven't heard from yet. What is your mission accomplished? Okay, we have here from Goloka Vasini. I tried to hear Krishna Katha as much as possible during my lunch, household service, etc. I tried not to complain and criticize others, even if I mind. It helped me. At least I observed where I was wrong. That's a huge win. Excellent. Okay, someone who hasn't said anything yet, what's your mission accomplished? If anybody ever asked you, what's all the things that's not Kumara taught, and you're just going, I don't know. But those of us who have our mission accomplished will say, yes, I know it's like this. All right, someone who hasn't said anything yet, what is your mission accomplished? Yes, Abhirupa Malati.
Mataji, you don't pronounce. Today I wanted to mold my life so that I can engage in the service of Krishna and will not forget him even for a second. And so I remembered him many a times, and I chanted Gayatri for the first time in my life in the morning and in the afternoon, and I will chant again in the evening.
Oh, you just took initiation?
Yes, Mataji, I have taken initiation.
Congratulations. All right, well, that is a big mission accomplished. Excellent. Okay, we still have some people we haven't heard from.
Okay. Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Oh, do we have somebody else?
This is Leela Madhuri Lalita.
Oh, the person with the name that I really like. Yes.
From morning, it was constantly I was thinking or hearing about Krishna or talking about Krishna, because today I was visiting some of my members' houses where, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, three new people have committed to chant today. So it was really, it is something good today. It has happened.
Very good.
I felt very good.
Excellent. Mission accomplished. Okay. Thank you very much. So again, we're doing 29 through 35. And here again, Sanat Kumara is continuing to instruct Maharaj Prithu. So, you all ready for the mission for today's class? Everybody ready? Everybody ready for our mission today? Okay. So, this is where our mission is, that we're going to choose freedom. So, Prabhupada talks a lot in this section about Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and how we should always choose moksha. Understanding moksha here is not meaning merging with the Brahman, but moksha meaning pure devotional service. That we're going to be consistently choosing freedom so that we can absorb our mind in Krishna, and we can avoid absorption of the mind in thoughts and feelings that will create obstructions in our spiritual life. So I want us to imagine by the end of this class, we will have understood the workings of the subtle body well enough so we can notice the tendency for ordinary material absorption and be able at will to change that to absorption in the Lord. To understand that, let's imagine that we can do that. Let's imagine, how would that feel? If I could notice, oh, my mind is starting to go to absorption. All right, let me switch it. And we can switch it to Krishna at will. And then we will avoid creating our own obstacles in our spiritual life. So this is our mission for today's class. All right. Hey Krishna. Okay, text 29. Nirmite sati sarvatra jala dapi purusha atmanascha parasjapi bidam pasyati nanyada. Only because of different causes does a person see a difference between himself and others, just as one sees the reflection of a body appearing differently manifested on water, on oil, or in a mirror. So, who gave instructions very similar to this? Does anybody remember? We'll put in the chat if you remember. Who said something very, very similar to this in the Bhagavatam? Anybody know? Oh, Nilamani also put a mission accomplished now in the chat. Excellent. Thank you. Congratulations. And Ratnam sent me a direct message about also his mission accomplished. So, excellent. Okay, so who gave a similar message like this? Sun reflected. Yes, but who said it? Who said it and to whom? Do you remember? A very famous part of the Bhagavatam.
Was it the Chaturshi?
Bhagavatam or Mahabharata?
Bhagavatam.
Was it in the Chaturshloki? One of the words? Like?
Well, there's that reflection that appears to be in darkness is in the Chaturshloki, yes, so the Lord to Brahma, but I'm thinking of, and so there may be more, I'm thinking of one in the 10th canto, near the beginning of the 10th canto. 111, aha! Surita Gore, you can now write to everybody, the chat's been fixed, so you don't have to just write to me. 111, yes. The world appears real. But I was thinking especially about this reflection. So the one I'm thinking about is about the moon being reflected. So who says this to whom? Put it in the chat, please. Nope. Vasudev to Kamsa. Yes! Oh, Nilamani got it! Very good! Yay! Congratulations! Excellent! Excellent! If I were with you in person, I would give you a sweet ball. All right. Yes. Vasudev to Kamsa. Should always have that in all of our classes, right? A bowl of Mahaprasadam. Okay. So the presence and absence of the subtle body. So what liberation means is the dissolution of the subtle body. That's what liberation means. The dissolution of the gross body happens naturally at death over and over again, but we're not liberated unless we're liberated from the subtle body, because the subtle body takes us from one body to another. Yam yam vapi saram bhava. So the goal of Krishna consciousness is the dissolution of the subtle body. Now, that doesn't mean that one doesn't have any mind, intelligence, and sense of identity, but it means that the real spiritual mind, intelligence, and identity manifest. So here we have some descriptions of what happens if we have a mind, intelligence, and false ego. Then we're going to see differences in the bodies of oneself and others. This particular description is also there in the Bhagavad Gita with the understanding of one in Rajagun. In Rajagun, we see people's identity according to their bodies. That's a male human, a male elephant, a female elephant, that's a tree. We see that's what it is. And this mentality of Rajagun, of course, is very, very prominent in the world today. All the talk about, you know, races and genders and nationalities, and this is all a Rajagun conception that comes from being controlled by the material mind, intelligence, and ego. But this is compared to seeing something like the sun or the moon reflected in water, oil, or a mirror. Prabhupada says there in the purport that it's when something's reflected in water, it appears to be moving. On ice, it appears fixed. When it's on oil, it appears hazy. So the soul in different bodies appears to be like, well, it's a different kind of living entity. Yes. And when we're no longer controlled by the mind, intelligence, and ego, we don't see that. We see that everyone is an equal soul. We see that we're all part of the Lord. Okay, going on to text 30. Indriyar Vishayakristayar Akshiptam Jayatamana Chaitanam Harate Budhe Stambastoyam Ivaradat. When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. We have so many allegories here. The Bhagavatam is poetry. And just like Srila Prabhupada wanted chapter 20 of the 10th canto made into the light of the Bhagavad, so we could just see how many... I mean, wouldn't that be nice to have a beautiful illustrated book with all these allegories from the Bhagavatam? And of course, here we have, again, a similarity to what verses in the Bhagavad Gita. You can put in the chat what verses in the Bhagavad Gita does this sound like?
2.62 and 2.63.
Yes, Bhagavad Gita 2.62 and 63. Excellent. So the same principles here, it's just presented a little bit differently. So here we have thinking of sense gratification, mind becomes agitated, discriminating power of intelligence is lost. Here, I'll put this list in the chat. Memory is lost, knowledge is destroyed, which is the greatest harm to the self. Now, thinking of sense gratification doesn't just mean thinking about gross physical things like food and sex or money. But it also just means meditating on the stories the mind tells us in this world. I'm going to become happy by doing this, or there's this problem in my life, there's this person who doesn't like me, and this horrible thing may happen. I was taking a devotee to the doctor yesterday, and she's partially disabled, and she's in her 70s. And she was saying, I worry so much, she said, that as I get older, I'm going to become more and more disabled, that probably is going to happen, and then I'm going to lose my independence. So that's also a kind of thinking about sense gratification. I like to reference the verse in the 10th canto when Bhima and Duryodhan are fighting at the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. They're fighting with clubs. And it said that both Bhima and Duryodhan were doing anusmara. So anu means to follow. Anuja means the younger brother, younger sister. Anu means to follow. Anusmaram, to remember. To remember again and again and again and again. So we've all noticed this tendency for the mind to be what we call in English mull, M-U-L-L. So we have a food preparation in North America in the fall time, like October, November. The apples become ripe, and there's so many apples. So people take apple juice and they cook it with cinnamon and cloves and allspice, nutmeg, until the flavor of the spices permeate the apple juice, and they call it mulled cider, mulled apple cider. So even though they've strained out the spices, it permeates the cider. So the mind is mulling. If this happens, I will be happy. If this happens, I will be unhappy. This happened in the past and made me happy. This happened in the past and made me unhappy. And constantly mulling. And this mulling agitates the mind. You can think of like you're boiling this apple juice with the spices, and the apple juice becomes agitated in the boiling. It's called a rolling boil. So the mind is agitated. And when the mind is agitated like this, with thoughts of how I'm going to get enjoyment or how I'm going to suffer. And again, we're not just talking about gross things like money and food and sex. We're talking about even our subtle relationships. Will I get this job? Will I get this house? Maybe my wife's angry with me today. Why isn't this person talking to me? Does this person like me? Then we lose our intelligence. We forget that we're not this body. We forget that we're not this mind. We forget we have nothing to do with this world. We lose our intelligence. We lose our ability to make good decisions. The intelligence makes good decisions. We act precipitously. Memory is lost. We forget what we've learned. We forget the Shastra. Now we're sitting reading these instructions, but if our mind gets agitated by sense gratification, we forget. And then knowledge is destroyed. Knowledge here is different from the discriminating power in memory. Knowledge means realization. We've all had, I would assume, realizations. Times that we've had experiences, epiphanies, where the information from the Shastra has become real to us. And we're like, wow, this is really true. But if we allow our minds to mull on sense gratification, we lose that. And once we lose that knowledge of our experience of spirituality, then it's as if we're not being able to access ourself. So the mind is very important in our spiritual practice, and the main theme of today's verses is the place of the mind in our spiritual practice. So I'd like to just discuss this for a moment. So what are your thoughts? Please raise your hand. What are your thoughts on the place of the mind in our spiritual life? What is the role of our mind in our spiritual life? Anybody's thoughts? Yes, Ajapur.
I feel that you're really the center for everything. I've heard that this body also exists in the space of mind. So, and then Krishna is talking about, he's asking your mind, Manmana Bhav Madhavakta, give me your mind. I want, think of me in your mind. And everything, all the contemplation start in the mind. hayato vishayan pumsa. We are thinking, starting in the mind. So we have to create an environment where mind does not get distracted too much into material things.
Thank you.
And somehow fill up the mind with Krishna consciousness. And then one more thing I'm going to add is, Prabhupada said, mind is like a reservoir. So if we have a lake here, whatever, if you throw a rock, that is not going to go anywhere. In the same manner, whatever we put in the mind, so the entrance of the soul, the senses, the doors of the senses, is going to just stay in the mind. We have to be very careful what to allow to enter into the mind.
Thank you. Shyam Kishore Prabhu, what's your thoughts on the place of the mind in our spiritual life?
Hare Krishna. So I think the way of the mind, like how we in Bhakti Yoga treat, or whereas how people who are yogis treat, I mean, we don't try to really attack our mind directly, but we follow a bottoms-up approach, like, you know, senses or engaging in practical service. And then the mind for us is like a trailing variable, is a trailing indicator. Whereas for the yogis, it is like the mind that they are trying to do. Because we go by how Arjun says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, it's very tough to control the mind. So we engage our senses, like our senses in the service of the Lord. And then by the grace of the Lord and by a purificatory process, the mind follows. So that is my thing.
So what you're saying is that our mind will follow whatever our gross senses are doing. And so one way to control the mind is to engage our gross senses. I have personally found, though, that it is entirely possible for my mind and my body to be in two different places at once and doing two entirely different things. I've definitely experienced that. So if my mind is very excited or upset about something, then whatever I'm doing with my body becomes nearly mechanical, and there's a disconnect. So I found that that's possible. Although I do think it's true that our mind tends to follow our senses. It's not absolutely like that. Shyamananda Prabhu, what is your thought on the place of the mind in our spiritual life?
Yeah, it came to my mind now that actually it's maybe the most valuable asset we have in this body. We could use for Krishna service. Everything is possible in the mind. And at the same time, at least for myself, I can see that sometimes it's the most neglected asset I have in Krishna consciousness, because I just do so many external services, but rarely I really am able to do it in full consciousness with my mind being fully there.
So our mission today will be very helpful for you then. All right, well, thank you for that introspection. This is, studying Bhagavatam is for the introspective sage, so we're all trying to be introspective sages here. Advaita Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Well, for some years now, I like to think of the mind and identify it different to myself. I often make a simile, an allegory in my heart, thinking that I'm the driver, I'm going somewhere, that I've got someone sitting next to me as a passenger, and that's the mind. But I try to ask it to be quiet. That's how I always feel, like I'm separate from the mind, and therefore just shut up and do what I say.
So you see the role of the mind is like a bothersome passenger in your car. That's its role.
Yeah, and it has, and I always
some annoying passenger, like someone who said, "Hey, can you give me your ride to the festival?" And you said, "Yeah, sure." And then once you got them in the car, you're like, "Oh my God, why did I give this person a ride? Just shut up and get your ride."
But I also like to think that it has no brain, so I have to think. So therefore you always use my intelligence to sort of quiet the mind. So I feel that always worked for me. I think of it completely as a different entity to myself, because it's very often we get entangled into into the emotions of the mind and identify with it. So whenever I get into that kind of situation, I say, just shut up.
All right, very nice. By the way, some of you you're moving on to strategies, and you're like jumping ahead in my educational plan for the class. You're also intelligent. You're jumping to the next thing. But the first thing I want to ask is just what's the role of the mind before we're going to figure out how to deal with it. But that's I like your thought process. And if I don't remember to do it, make sure in this class, because my mind is actually not functioning very well today. But if I don't remember to do it, if you can remind me that I want to talk about that strategy of seeing it as another entity, one of the most helpful strategies. Yes, Ratnam Prabhu, what is the role of the mind in our spiritual life?
The role of mind, I feel, is that it is an active role, actually. But either we have to engage the mind, or we should not take into consideration. We should remove the elements. We should not take the mind into consideration.
Okay.
Because mind is actually, we cannot trust. It keeps on moving. So we should engage it. If you cannot, we should totally remove the mind.
Okay. You're all jumping to strategy. You're all jumping to how. Which is great, because that will be our next step. But I want to know what first. What is the role of this mind before I'm going to figure out how to deal with it? What is the role of this mind in our spiritual life? Do you have some thoughts on that? I mean, I really appreciate what you're saying, because it's like the next thing.
Actually, long time, Mataji, I hear a lecture from the Tamil Krishna Goswami Maharaj. He said, I learned not to trust my mind for the period. So the mind actually takes all the decisions. It has like viewpoints on others. It creates a lot of instances, and we think a lot of things, past, present, and future. It's everything, the image is present. So if we don't trust, we should just neglect it. Then
okay.
We can jump
so,
beyond
so you're
that
saying
concept.
The role of our mind in our spiritual life is basically a botheration.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Very much, you know, what Advaita Krishnaprabhu said, the role of the mind in our spiritual life is like this irritating passenger that we wish we hadn't agreed to give a ride to. All right. Okay. Mahalakshmi, your thoughts on the role of the mind in our spiritual life. Thank you, Ratna.
We hear that the mind can be our best friend or our worst enemy, so we can take her as a servant, our best servant, with which to focus upon Krishna.
All right, so Shamananda just said the same thing in the chat. Great minds think in the same direction. Very nice. Pulastamuni, I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that other perspective also. Pulastamuni, what is the role of the mind in our spiritual life?
Well, basically to focus on the things at hand and not getting distracted by other things. In Krishna consciousness should be, you know, to employ it exactly for the task at hand without anything coming in between. It should lead us to intelligence then, to discern whether what we're doing is right or wrong, but at the same time, it should be focused on the task at hand. That's all. Nothing else should come in between.
Mm.
And in consciousness, exactly, you know, for that.
Mm, okay, and what is the mind's role? So again, you've got us with a strategy. What's the role of the mind?
Right.
What's its job in our spiritual life?
To help us remember the Lord.
To help us remember the Lord. Okay, so it can be this annoying passenger. Help us remember the Lord. Okay. Asudit Gaur Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
I think mind plays the biggest role in our life, as it is the only one which engages us in bhakti by saying, see how good are these people, or how good prasad is this. And now we are in bhakti, now it says, sometimes it tries to take us away, like what is the use? Or one day it says, do 64 round, and next day it says, okay, you have done 16 into 4, it's for 4 days, now take rest. So it sometimes takes us away and sometimes brings us very close. So it plays a dual phase game in our life.
Okay, so it has two roles. It has a role that it can bring us to Krishna, a role that it can bring us away from Krishna. And Goloka Vasini said that the mind has no job. Well, I don't know about that, because Krishna says twice in the Bhagavad Gita, man mana bhava mad bhakto. He says that, doesn't he? Man mana bhava mad bhakto. Twice. Right? Goloka Vasini, what do you think about that?
The material mind has no role.
No role. Well, what's the mana Krishna's talking about there? What do you think,
Madhiji? Because, like, for a devotee, Guru's instructions and scriptures, they have the only role. Where, like Prabhupada also said, from where the mind comes in between.
Wow! So you just want to like smash it and bash it. What are you going to do with the man mana bhava mad bhakto, Goloka Vasini?
That is the heart, Mataji.
Are you going to put that as the heart? Bajahure mana shri nanda nandana bhaya charanara vrindore. So I don't know about this no role. Think about it. Okay, Neelamani, what's your realization about the role of the mind?
I think the mind definitely has a role. We remember...
Uh-oh, 1 second. I just realized I told Goloka Vasini to think about the role of the mind. Oops. I just told you to think about the role of the mind.
Okay,
so if you're going to think about the role of the mind, you've got to use your mind to think about the role of the mind. Alright, well, how did I get my thumb going up on my finger? Sorry, Neelamani, yes.
Yeah, I was saying we have often heard of the analogy of the human body as a chariot, where the passenger is the jiva, the charioteer is the intellect. The mind is the reins, and the senses are the six forces,
yes,
and so forth, right? So, you know, from that analogy, we can understand that the role of the mind is very much to ultimately be a mechanism by which the jiva and the intellect can connect to the faculties of this body. And when we let the mind do things independently without control of the intellect, then the senses can, the horses can go wild and run here, there, and everywhere. But when we use the intellect to drive the mind and the jiva to drive the intellect, then the chariot can move in a nice, orderly way.
Okay. So with using these analogies, is you're explaining that the mind is can be our help in engaging the senses. So this is like going in the other direction. So we're saying if we engage the senses, the mind will follow, hopefully. But the mind can also be a means of engaging the senses, a well-directed mind. If our mind's in the right place, then our senses will do the right thing. And we have some nice things in the chat about sankalpa vikalpa, the business of the mind. And accept and reject, well, we're going to be talking in another class about the six symptoms of surrender. And the first two items of surrender are to accept what's favorable to Krishna and to reject what's favorable to Krishna. So in that way, the mind can be our help in this. We can train the mind to accept what's favorable to Krishna and to reject what's unfavorable to Krishna. But the mind is basically our central pivot. So, you know, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, tvaja chante kalevram. The mind is the pivot. Now, we do want to come to a point where by the thoughts of the mind is destroyed. Oh, who remembers that analogy from yesterday? That by the thoughts of the mind, if we have the mind thinking of Krishna, then those thoughts of the mind will destroy the material mind. What allegory from yesterday would explain that process?
The fire in the wood.
Exactly, thank you. That there's fire in the wood, and when you get the fire out of the wood, the fire burns the wood itself. So the mind has it's really the most important. That is the point that Sanat Kumara is making in these verses we're studying today. It is the most important thing. The subtle body in general, the mind, intelligence, and the false ego. Okay. Going on. Why people knock on the door? Yes, I'm giving a class.
I come
again.
What? I just wanted to ask you to accept my sincere condolences. Thank you. I never thought it was serious, but I never thought it was that it was going to leave his body. And yesterday I went to the phone and I looked. You posted about 3 so something in the afternoon, and I saw it until 7 o'clock, so that was too late. And one day I came to also to knock the door.
He died yesterday about 3 o'clock. I'm teaching a class.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mataji, but I'm really sad after hearing that news. Because if that happens to my nephew, believe me, I would be crying like...
Well, I have been crying like anything, but right now I want to try to focus on the bottom top. Thank you.
How do you want for a while?
Trying to remember Arjuna grieving about the death of Abhimanyu and getting back on the battlefield and fighting with Jayadrath. All right. Where was I? Yes, it's the whole subtle body. It's actually not just the mind, but the whole mind, intelligence, and false ego is our pivot, much more so than the gross activities of our senses. And that's what we're going to be looking at now. Okay, going on to text 31. Brasyat yanu smatish chittam. Ooh, look at this word, everybody. What's right there? Do y'all see that word? Anusmritis. Anusmarnam. Anusmritis. Remembering again and again. Brasyat yanu smritis chittam. Chittam means consciousness. Jnana brahmsa smriti kshaye tad rodham kavaye prahur atmapanavam atmana. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. So by lost, meaning a person forgets that they're the soul. They just completely forget, and we see that most materialists live their whole life like this. And we see that can happen to us too as devotees, as practicing devotees, that, you know, if we're upset about something, angry about something, worried about something, or even really happy about something, we can forget that we're a soul. We can think that this body, this identity is mind. And we are, it's as if our soul is lost. And again, I really want to draw your attention to this anusmritihi. It means thinking over and over and over again. We notice how the mind does this, right? The intelligence does this also with our plan making. We think of something, by think of something leads us to something, leads us to something, and we're like, you know, you've seen those animals like mice and hamsters and gerbils, they're on this wheel, and they're just going, going, going. And the mind is going and going. Text 32. Nata paratra loke pumsa swarta vatikrama yad ad yanyasya preyastvam atmanaswa vatikramat. Now, this is a pretty heavy statement. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subjects' matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. Interesting. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing. So this is what we have a taste for. All right, so what I'd like to do right now, I'd like us to, in breakout rooms, to discuss this question that I'm going to post into the chat. Oof, Krishna Chaitanya. There we go. So I think if we are honest, we would say that as a conditioned soul, we have some taste for things that are not spiritual. We think they're tasty. Whether that's talking about politics, talking about somebody's fall down, eating too much in the name of prasadam, mundane music, TV, whatever it may be. But we have some taste for something that is not spiritual. And Sanat Kumara is saying that this is our greatest obstacle. Now, the problem is that we're pleasure-seeking beings. We must be experiencing some kind of pleasure. We have to. We cannot put ourselves in a position where we're not having any kind of happiness. If we try to do that by force, we will find happiness somewhere. You know, the seven secondary rasas include things like anger and horror and fear and lamentation. And people will find happiness in material anger. That's why people go to political rallies and sporting events. They're not going there because they actually care about the political situation or the team. Why do people care about these teams, you know? So ridiculous. I'm rooting for the team from my city. But the football players aren't even from that city. They're from other places. They have nothing to do with that city. And you have nothing to do with the team. So that they don't really care about the team. They're going there so they can be angry. Or they can experience viraras, chivalry. And again, you know, people marching in political rallies, and they're doing that so they can try to get some pleasure from anger. Or people like to get pleasure from fear. Or from lamentation. You ever heard, you know, even devotees. I know devotees that all they ever do practically is complain. Oh, poor me, oh, poor me, oh, this happened, oh, poor me. It's like a bunch of perverted karunaras. It's all it is. I mean, we may say, oh, you know, look at someone trying to enjoy material madhuryaras, but the other things are, they're also, it's the same. I'm trying to enjoy material karunaras. I'm trying to enjoy material fear. And we need to be honest that we have, over millions of lifetimes, developed this taste for material things, like a person who's developed a taste for junk food. So I have a friend, and there's a couple that I'm friends with, and the woman was brought up, the family that she was brought up in, they ate only junk food, only garbage food. Like, the mother never cooked. And I don't know if this is true in the rest of the world, but in America, we have these things that look like slices of cheese, but they're called processed cheese. They actually call it American cheese. But it has some cheese in it, but it's mostly like a bunch of different chemicals and stuff. And it's very popular. So the husband tried to convince his wife, you know, look, you can buy sliced real cheese. It's just as convenient, but it'll be real cheese. And she says, no, I like the taste better of the processed cheese, because that's what she grew up with. So that's what she's feeding their children and so forth. So we have these tastes for inferior things. And we can't just say, stop it. It doesn't work. And if you have tried that, you don't have to raise your hands, but you know, all have realized that it doesn't work. So I'd like us to just discuss. Let's take 8 minutes to have a breakout room. And I'd like you to discuss strategies. Okay. Strategies for how are we going to deal with our taste for material life without artificial repression. Okay? So everybody will have 1 or 2 minutes to contribute.
Recording started.
I did that. Okay. But I'm not sure where that recording is going. It's the problem.
I think, Mother, you are recording to the local mission. You need to record to the cloud.
I hit record to the cloud, but hopefully that records to the VIHE cloud and not to my Zoom cloud. That's what I'm... Anyway, I did it. Whatever happens, happens. Text 33. Yeah? Okay. Artendriarta bidyanam sarvata panavonrinam brahmstito jnana vijnanad yena vishtatimukyatam. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. So stones is kind of interesting. Prabhupada talks about hills. Defining stones here as hills. So we know that hills can grow, and therefore they're also considered living entities. All right, so here... Again, we're looking at some connection with Gita 2:62 to 63. That's kind of like our whole thing going on here in these verses. So let's look at the main points for this verse. Right? Constant thinking of money and its use for sense gratification. We can certainly think of money for how to build a temple. We can even think about money in terms of how to provide pious wealth for society that would please Krishna. How can we make society prosperous in dharmic ways? But if we're thinking about just how to enjoy the world, then there's the destruction of all the goals and the loss of knowledge and realization and this entrance into immovable life forms. And then Prabhupada talks about in this purport that the voidist philosophers are also going to go there. All right, so what are your thoughts about why do the gross materialists and the voidists end up in the same place? Anybody's thoughts?
Gross materialists and the voidists.
And the voidists, yeah. That's what Prabhupada talks about in this purport. So the gross materialists who just want to enjoy the body, and then the people who are really into the void, everything's going to become void. They end up becoming trees and hills. They end up becoming living entities who can't even move. Any thoughts about why they both end up there? And we're on text 33. Yes, Shyamananda.
Both of those parties ignore the super soul in their own hearts and in the hearts of all the other living entities. The ones, one of those parties, because they just want to enjoy, no matter whether they're harming others and the others, because they think that everybody is there's no super soul at all. Actually,
wow. All right. Somebody else with some thoughts. Someone who hasn't said anything yet today would be nice. Neelamani.
Interestingly, we were discussing a little bit of this yesterday in one of our small group meetings. The whole concept of free will and individual freedom. One of the people was giving the analogy that if we actually misuse our free will, just as if we, in the material sense, used our free will to commit a crime, then our free will becomes restricted. We get put in prison and our scope becomes restricted. So in that same sense, you know, our free will is ideally given to us to try to go back to Krishna, go back home, realize our spiritual, and if we misuse it, then automatically it gets restricted. And then we get these lower life forms when we don't have as much ability to exercise that free will.
Yes. So that's just... And I think what you're also implying is that to the degree that we misuse it, to that degree we get restricted. And so these trees and hills are an extreme degree of restriction.
Right.
Right? I mean, at least if you can be a bug moving around. Some little bug moving around, you're not as restricted as if you're a tree. Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts why both the voidist and the gross materialist end up in these immovable life forms? Dvaita Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah, I mean, the voidist, he doesn't want to use his senses in any other way. He wants to quiet them. So then he is completely quiet in a hill and a mountain. And the materialist, he uses it for his own purpose instead of using it for the right purpose. So it's like abuse of the senses, then you're restricted in the trees and the mountains.
Mm. So either those you don't want to use or those who abuse. All right, excellent. Okay, let's go on now to text 34. Na kuryat kar hichit sangam tamas tivram titrishuhu dharm arta kama mokshanam yad atyanta vigatakam. So, dharma arta kama moksha. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. All right, so I'd like to ask for a volunteer to read the purport. It's one large paragraph. See if I can just get the whole paragraph there. Okay, a volunteer to read this, please.
Can I read?
Sure.
The four principles of life allow one to live accordingly, according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily, but such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, but prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat or milk because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge in the Shastras, and if we live in a regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will not be able to go.
We will be.
We will. Yeah, I was also thinking this. We will be able to go forward to liberation. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, thank you very much. So, this last sentence is very important, isn't it? All our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we'll be able to go forward to liberation. And earlier in the purport, Prabhupada says, it's not possible as long as we have a body to be completely free from Dharma, Artha, Kama. All right. Can anyone think of a verse in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna talks about living happily and attaining liberation?
Three temples where he takes, burning sacrifices, cooperation between demigods.
Excellent.
Living entities.
And there you can live happily and attain liberation. Right now in the temple here, we just finished reading about, in our morning classes, about Krishna giving benediction to the tailor and the florist in Mathura. And both the tailor and the florist, he gave benedictions that they would be pure devotees, they'd go back to Godhead, and they would also have all material facilities, everything, strong health, wonderful family, good reputation, you know, anything that anybody could want in the world. And of course, I think, you know, most of us, we read those and go, oh, I'd like that. I'd like to have a happy material life and go back to Godhead also. Yes. So that's really the desire of the Lord, isn't it? The desire of the Lord is he wants the conditioned living entities to be able to fulfill their material desires in such a way that their material desires are satisfied and we can also go back to home, back to Godhead. That's his desire. Of course, we might say that the Lord explains to Yudhisthira in the 10th canto, I think it's in chapter 89, that if there's someone he favors, he takes away their material possessions. So why is that, if he wants us to be happy materially and spiritually? Because the Lord wants us to have material prosperity and spiritual prosperity, but he's going to prioritize the spiritual prosperity. Just like you want your children, you want them to have toys, and you also want them to learn how to get along well with other people. So if they're playing with their toys and they start fighting and hitting each other with their toys, you'll take the toys away because getting along with their brothers and sisters is more important than having the toys. So Krishna wants to give us full material facility and full spiritual facility. He wants to give us material and spiritual prosperity. But if he sees that the material prosperity is interfering with our spiritual prosperity, he'll take it away. He'll restrict it in some way. And that's not because he's mean. And that's not because having material prosperity has to be an impediment to spiritual prosperity. I think this point is often very misunderstood. In the universe, the more Krishna conscious the beings are, the greater level of prosperity they have. On the higher planets, where the beings are more Krishna conscious, they have more prosperity. A lack of prosperity is connected to a lack of spirituality. Of course, thinking like this can lead to what's called a prosperity gospel, which is something that we find in Christian groups. I don't know if that's true in the rest of the world, but it's certainly true in America, where they say, you know, if God really loves you, you'll know because you're rich. And of course, most of these guys are big cheaters. And they say the main way to get rich is to give donations to spiritual people like me. So send me your money. I mean, some of these guys will say, you know, max out your credit cards and go into debt and send me everything. And then by that, you'll be blessed and you'll become rich like me. See my private jet for $600 million? See, that shows that God loves me. So this is, of course, nonsense. It's not that we can say that someone's spirituality can be measured by how much money they have, or by whether or not they can buy a private jet. You know, that's not the point. But it is generally true that if someone is in spiritual consciousness, that they will also have material prosperity. So what are we supposed to do? We are supposed to spiritualize the ordinary part of our life. Please listen very, very carefully. This is a point that is so misunderstood in our Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada says here in this purport, we cannot be entirely free from dharma, artha, kama. And we tend to think that that's all just maya and it's all garbage and we just have to get rid of all of it, which is not the bhakti position at all. Our position is yukta vairagya. In fact, that position, my dear friends, is very much like the voidus that we just read about in the other verse. And what do they become? Trees and hills. Anybody want to be a tree or a hill? Any volunteers? Trees, hills, anybody? Next life. So let's not be a voidist. Let's not say we want to make everything zero. Making our material life zero means to spiritualize our life. In our last class, we were studying about how that the spiritualist sees that Krishna is everything. Krishna is everywhere. How many times does Prabhupada tell us that Krishna didn't tell Arjuna? Arjuna was asking for it. Give up your fighting, give up your family. Just, you know, Arjuna kept insisting. I don't want to fight this war. I don't want to fight this war. It's all maya. It's all nonsense. All these terrible things will happen. And you're telling me to do booty yoga. Let me just do booty yoga. Finally, Krishna, I believe, got a little exasperated and said, all right, Arjuna, if that's what you really want to do, this is how you do it. You go to the forest. You sit on deer skin. Forget about Draupadi and Subhadra and stare at your nose. Do a lot of om. And Arjuna's like, Chanchalihima na Krishna, hey, that's not going to work. And Krishna, what happens when people try this and fail? Like, don't they lose everything? And after that, Arjuna doesn't bring it up again. He doesn't say again, hey, I think I'm just going to live in the world by begging, and I think I'm just going to run away from everything. I mean, the whole Bhagavad Gita really is guidance on career, isn't it? Like how to use your nature, how to use your livelihood, how to use your career in service. Look at Gita 4:24. Everything merged into transcendence. This concept that this stuff is material and this stuff is spiritual is part of illusion. I mean, we may have to say that in the beginning. And if we're talking about, like here in this purport, Prabhupada's talking about breaking the regulative principles, you know, slaughterhouses and brothels and things like that. Because there are certain activities, illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, there are certain activities that if we do them, we lose our ability to see that Krishna is everything and Krishna is everywhere. But actually, Krishna is everything and Krishna is everywhere. And there's ways to use our dharma artha kama to facilitate moksha. That is the technique of spiritual life, as Prabhupada talks about in his first purpose of ISKCON. All right, how are we going to do this? How are we going to spiritualize the ordinary part of our life? What are we going to do to spiritualize it? Again, this is one of the main things we focus on in our Career Dharma book and course. The first thing we focus on is, okay, you've got to get your nature in aligned with what you're doing. First way to spiritualize what you're doing is to work according to your nature. Don't do someone else's work. All right, what's the next thing you're going to do? So you're going to not just work for yourself. You're going to give in charity. You're going to make sure your work is honest. You're going to make sure your work, what you do, adds value to society. Now, then what are you going to do? How are you going to go even further? In 3:16, Bhagavad Gita, I think it is, there's the chakra of work. Prabhupada talks about that this, a chakra means it moves. There's this moving wheel, just like in nature, everything gives back. Right? Nature gives to the trees give back to nature. And we're supposed to give back. We're supposed to engage in yajna. We're supposed to engage in celebrating the divine in every aspect of our life. We're supposed to do work that adds real value to society. And we're supposed to work above the gunas. We're supposed to work above Rajas, Tamas, and Sattva. We're supposed to work as a servant. This is the service that Krishna has given me. Very nice explanation in Bhagavad Gita 3:30 of three things to do, three things not to do. To spiritualize our life. So rather than trying to get rid of our life as if we're avoidist, we should try to Krishnaize our life. How can I Krishnaize my life? What can I do to Krishnaize my life? That would be what we should do for ourselves and what we should do for others. How can I Krishnaize my mind, my intelligence, my identity? How can I Krishnaize my activities? Because some of my activities are going to be, Prabhupada says in this purport, you can argue with him if you like, but some of the Prabhupada says, as long as we have a body, we're going to have to do some dharma artha kama. So how to turn those dharma artha kama into bhakti? Prabhupada gives the analogy, I was just hearing him saying this morning in a class, of the iron rod and the fire. Of course, we don't see that very often in modern society. We don't see a lot of blacksmiths. But, you know, when you put an iron rod in the fire, it becomes like fire. So I often give the example, like if you put a pot on your stove, the pot becomes hot. The fire is our sadhana, and the pot we put on the stove, it's like all the other things we have to do, from brushing our teeth and taking a shower to earning a livelihood and feeding our children and sweeping the floor. You know, and to Krishnaize it. All right. Let's go on to 35. To Tatrapi moksha evarta achani katayeshate trivargo yar trivargorvata yato nityam kajanta bhaya samyuta. Out of the four principles, namely religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, liberation has to be taken very seriously. The other three are subject to destruction by the stringent law of nature or death. So this is the essence of our mission for this class, is how we're going to take liberation seriously. So the other three are subject to destruction. Prabhupada says here that we have to take liberation seriously even at the sacrifice of the other three items, because they're all going to be sacrificed anyway. I like where Bali Maharaj says to Vamandev, why not? It actually says the Sukracharya about giving charity to Vamandev. He said, why not give to the Lord all those things that are going to be taken at death anyway? Of course, one can say, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, by Dharma you go to the heavenly planets and so forth. But eventually that's all destroyed. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. Yes. But real liberation is permanent. And then Srila Prabhupada's talking about what is liberation. The liberation, Bhagavad Gita is quoting 4.9, Tvaktva deham punarjanmanaiti, not have to take birth again. And he's saying, we're not interested in merging into the Brahman, we're interested in devotional service. Okay, so we're going to do two more things in the class. Okay, before we go on to this, how we're going to prioritize liberation, I want to spend a good deal of time talking about that, because that's what I promised you earlier, that we would talk about strategies, which you were all jumping to. All of you were jumping to the end of the class at the beginning of the class, as strategies for how we're going to deal with a subtle body. Before we go to that, which will be the last thing we'll discuss today as part of our mission, how we're going to achieve our mission for this class, I want us to look at the beginning of this section, where we had actually this whole section, that what happens when we deviate from our original consciousness? What happens when we do this anusmriti? So I'm going to do the same thing we've done before. I don't want you to look. No looking. No looking at the chat. No looking at your notes. No looking at the Bhagavatam. I want you to just write down, and don't write it down in the chat, write it down someplace else, write down all the results of what happens when we deviate from our original consciousness. And should I give you 3 minutes for this or 5 minutes? I think I'll give you 3 minutes. Okay, so let's take 3 minutes and write from memory, without looking, everything that happens when we deviate from our original consciousness as explained in today's verses. Okay, we'll take 3 minutes. Okay, now what I'd like you to do is take your list and check. By the way, the system we're doing is a very good way to learn anything that you want to memorize. Write it from memory and then go back and check. It's an extremely good technique, especially if you check very quickly after you've written it. Not like the next day, but the faster you check it, the more you'll remember it. Now go back and check. You can check the list that I put in the chat, or you can check in the Bhagavatam itself. And so please fix your list and add anything to it. We're going to give you another 3 minutes to do this. All right. What I'd like you all to do now is write in the chat, two or three sentences summarizing the full list. So if you were going to say two or three sentences to somebody explaining all these results of letting our mind deviate from spiritual consciousness. Okay, very nice. Shaktimata, very nice. Suryadegor, very nice. Kanta, very nice. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, Shankishore, nice. You probably would want to get a few more of the points. Okay, very nice, Ambika. Excellent, Goloka Vasini. Wow. Okay, Mahalakshmi, very good. Pulastamuni, I really like the way you say that. A previous position or actual one, very nice. Shamananda, excellent. Has everybody written something now? Abhirupa Malati, did you write something? This is so much easier when we're in person. It's like I got to scroll up and match it to your names. And who's missing? I don't have Abhirupa Malati and Madhura Dameshwari. I don't think I have anything from you here. I'm missing somebody else. Stuti Priya Radha, please write something. Here we have from Aja Good. Leela Madhuri Lalita, we need from you. Whoa, Aja, very nice. Very, very nice. Still have some people we haven't heard from. Leela Madhuri Lalita, Stuti Priya Radha. Madhuri Dameshwari, that's nice, but you really want something more comprehensive than that. You want to get more of the list there. I'm still waiting for Abhirupa Malati too, I think, yes? Come on, you can do it. You can do it. Yes, you can. Krishna will help you. So please, these people are waiting for it. Please write something in the chat. Come on, I have one more thing I want to do, and our time is running out. Good, Abhirupa Malati. Very good, let's see. Oh, you got something that nobody else got. Woohoo! We had to wait for yours, but it was worth waiting for. Excellent, excellent. Yay! Abhirupa Malati, yay! Okay, who are we still missing? Leela Madhuri Lalita, do we get yours? Leela Madhuri Lalita, we need yours. Do we have Stuti's? Stuti Priya? Is she here? Or do we just have a black rectangle?
Padiji, I'm here, but can I be excused for today? Actually, I'm in some service.
Well,
I'm so sorry.
It's your loss.
This last 10 minutes, I actually lost.
Well, that's pretty severe, because this was one of the two most important things that we are doing today.
I'll write and I'll send it to you personally.
No, you write it for yourself. This is my availability ends at the end of this class. I'm not making a commitment to pass that. So you write it there, but I just won't be able to give you feedback. There we get from Lila Madhuri Lalita, I guess. Oh, you also got something that no one else got. Wow. Super cool. Yay!
I'm very bad in typing, so it takes some time for me.
No problem. Sometimes, you know, diamonds take a long time, so they're sometimes the best things, they're well worth waiting for. All right, the last thing we're going to do now is related to our mission, and I think that this is very exciting because I believe we would all like to be able to control our mind. Who would like to be able to control their mind? Me! Because it's the pivot. Our mind intelligence, our identity is the pivot. We're going to think about nonsense. We're going to become a hill. Doesn't sound very nice to me. Oh, something else I wanted to show you. Sorry, my I've really not been at my top form today. Let's find that other thing I wanted to show you. I'm actually surprised I'm able to do anything today. Okay. So, here Prabhupada's talking about what happens when we don't have our mind fixed. He's talking here about chanting. He said, as soon as you chant Hare Krishna, immediately you remember Krishna, Krishna's form, Krishna's fighting, Krishna's sitting on the chariot of Arjuna. If you read Krishna book always, some of his pastimes will immediately come, appear in my brain, immediately, as soon as you chant Hare Krishna. That is required, smaranam, automatically. As soon as you chant Hare Krishna, if you mechanically chant thinking of something nonsense, then it will be useless. Then Prabhupada has a long pause, and then he says, well, it will take time. But if there is immediate remembrance of Krishna, we are hearing about Krishna, so many things, reading about Krishna, why not remembrance? That means inattention. That means deficient in Krishna consciousness. So we are meant to be attentive. And we are meant to notice. My dear friends, you noticed in today's verses so many parallels to Gita 2:62-63, right? We're noticing that over and over again with little different explanations. So we want, I mentioned this the other day also, we want to notice at the contemplation stage. We want to notice at the contemplation stage and not get to the anusmaram stage. Not getting to the attachment stage. That when we notice our mind is starting to mull, remember we talked about mulling? We turn off the fire and stop the mulling process. So Prabhupada in his first purpose of ISKCON talked about techniques of spiritual life. So we don't have time to go over these in depth. Each of these would take me a full hour to explain, at least maybe 2 hours. Some of them, there's been whole books written about them. But I could give you a little summary, because your mission is to take one of these, or if you have another technique besides the ones I've mentioned, that's fine, and to be consciously choosing freedom over dharma, artha, and kama. Okay, the mind, as we know, has thinking, feeling, and willing. Thinking, feeling, and willing. So let's look first at feelings. And now feelings and thoughts are very interrelated, and there's two theories about it. One theory is that our thoughts give birth to feelings, and the other theory is that our feelings give birth to thoughts. And my suspicion is that both operate. So feelings giving birth to thoughts, we talked about this the other day, that something happens in my environment, and from that my brain responds by sending certain chemicals into my body, which then I interpret as particular emotions, and then I have thoughts about those emotions. My thoughts are usually, this is a good emotion, I have the right to it, or this is a bad emotion, I want to repress it. So that's the theory about feelings leading to thoughts. The other theory about thoughts leading to feelings is that I'm thinking about something, and those thoughts that I have, those thoughts themselves tell my brain to set out certain chemicals which give rise to feelings. So I'd say that the medical studies support both of those things. Like, let's say you're in your room alone and there's nothing happening in your environment, and you're just thinking about some terrible thing that did happen in your environment a year ago, or you're thinking about how terrible you are, or no one loves you, and you'll never be a devotee, and, you know, so whatever. Those kind of thoughts, they signal to the brain to send out the stress hormones, which then produce things that we call emotions. So in that way, the thoughts give birth to feelings, or again, actually something happens, somebody sends us an insulting message, a threatening message, and we become, our brain floods our body with certain chemicals, and we become frightened, we become angry, we have sensations that we call fear and anger, and then from that we have thoughts about it. Oh, what a terrible person, I should do something, I should say something, you know, so it can go either way. All right, so let's say that we're going to give you some techniques for dealing with feelings, and we're going to give you some techniques for dealing with thoughts. And again, these are very, I'm giving them in a very sutra kind of way. So one way to deal with feelings is just allow the feelings to be in the body. Just allow, we talked about this the other day, I believe, just simply allow them to be. And they will pass, like you let the train pass by. You don't have to express the feelings, you don't have to say anything, you don't have to do anything. Just let your body feel whatever it's feeling, and it will subside. You basically never turn on the thinking that goes with the feeling at all. You just let the feeling be the feeling. And the only thoughts you have about the feeling are, there's a feeling. There are some sensations in my body. That's interesting. And nothing more than that. And any other thoughts, you just stop them, basically, and go back, oh, this is just an interesting feeling. This feeling's not going to hurt me. It will go away by itself. That's one technique for dealing with feelings. Another technique, which I mentioned earlier today, which is very powerful, but can only be done by people like you who study the Shastra. This is not a technique we can teach to people who have not studied Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahabharata. They won't be able to do this. And this is that we turn to Lila. We take that feeling and we find, and please listen carefully, it's got to be a pure devotee. Sometimes I tell people this and they choose a demon. No, don't choose a demon. Don't choose a demon. Don't do that. Bad, bad, bad. But people will do that. They'll just choose a demon from the Shastra. No. Choose a pure devotee from the Shastra. You can also choose God. That can also work. And you meditate on their feelings, which are the reality of which you're feeling something material. I can't remember whether it was with all of you or with my other Wednesday class, but I was feeling the other day a lot of anger at somebody who had done something horrible, and I ended up meditating. Did I talk to you about that? I meditated on Nisingadeva. Yeah, and then I was, within 10 minutes, I was happy. I was just happy. I mean, I was really meditating on Nisingadeva. I put on music of these really heavy-duty Nisinga mantras, the one Krishna Kshetramar sings that they play in Simachalam every morning, and the one that Javi plays. Like, there are these roaring, bashing Nrisingha mantras. They weren't like Namaste Nrisingha. No, it wasn't like that. It was like mantras. And this is a little embarrassing, but anyway, I was dancing around my room in front of my deities, and I was acting out the whole Nrisingha Leela and pulling out Hiranyakashipu's intestines and pulling out his heart and throwing them across the room. And then my mundane anger at this abusive person was transformed. It was just transformed, and I was completely happy, and I no longer felt any pollution from material anger. Some years ago, I was speaking to some devotees who were unfairly accused of things, and they had been banned from coming to a temple, and they were really struggling, and I was talking to the couple, and I said to them, can you think of anyone in Leela who has this experience? And then the husband said, the Pandavas. And I said, all right, pick a Pandava you want to meditate on. He said, Nakula. I said, okay, fine. How do you think Nakula was feeling in their exile? Really meditate on how he was feeling. And we started discussing, so until we could feel something of how Nakula is feeling. Now, if you doubt this, Rupa Goswami talks about this in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that when we meditate on the feelings of the great devotees, we can feel something of their feelings. So I'm not making this up. And as he was meditating on these feelings of Nakula, he felt relief from the material feelings. Okay. Another technique, and this is used also with the thoughts, but another technique with the feelings, is you ask yourself, do I want anger or do I want freedom? Do I want Dharma, Artha, Kama, or do I want moksha? What do I want? Do I want to hold on to my anger at this person or do I want to be free? Do I want to hold on to my guilt and shame, or do I want to be free? What do I want? Which means stopping both indulging the feelings and resisting the feelings. My dear friends, freedom is not resisting the feelings. Resisting them makes them stronger. Freedom means you no longer express or repress. You just let them be. But you ask yourself this question. What do I want more? All right, let's go on to thoughts. Sorry, I'm going a little bit over time. Let's go into thoughts. Again, it can be choosing liberation. Do I want to have this anusmaram, this anusmriti about these thoughts, or do I want freedom? What do I want? Is this what I want to be meditating on when I die? I don't know when I'm going to die. My grandson Chakra didn't think he was going to die. We don't think every time we get in a car that this is going to be when I'm going to die. Is this what I want to be thinking of? What do I want? Another technique is questioning our thoughts as if we're like a police interrogator. So our thoughts are, this person lied to me. And we say, is that true? Did they really lie to you? Yeah. Do you absolutely know for sure that it's true? Like you're in the courtroom, you know. Is that true beyond a reasonable doubt? Do you have any reason to doubt? And in most cases we'll say, I'm not absolutely sure that it's true. Many, many years ago I remember saying something to my youngest son. And he said to me, Mata, are you sure that that's true? I'm like, yeah. He said, are you 100% sure that it's true? And then I thought, he must know something I don't know. And I stopped. Interrogate your thoughts. Nobody loves me. I'll never go back to Godhead. Everything's useless. Whatever. anusmaram thoughts we have. I'm going to get old and crippled and nobody will love me, like my friend said in the car yesterday. And you take the thought like it's a suspect. Is that true? Do you know that that's true? Is it the absolute truth? And then you ask yourself, if I choose to believe this, how do I feel? If I choose to believe that this thought is true, how do I feel? Do I feel happy? Do I feel enlivened? Or do I feel depressed and angry and sad? How do I feel? Let's say that it was impossible for me to have this thought. How would I feel? Then what do I choose? Am I going to choose to believe these thoughts, or am I going to choose freedom? All right. So I'm sorry we went a few minutes over. I really do try to be on time. Your mission for tomorrow is to choose one of these or a technique of your own for dealing with the thoughts and feelings of the mind. There's many more techniques besides what I've taught you, and you may have some that are very useful for yourself or that you've learned from others. And I would like you to use it at least one time, and if you don't need it yourself, maybe you can help somebody else use it. Okay? And come back tomorrow with a mission accomplished. I'm not